A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hello, Herman and Corin. So as you know, we're currently looking at places to rent in Jerusalem, and it is definitely a very tight rental market. It's what there is, you know, it's kind of what sometimes feels like it's falling between the cracks. We heard from one broker recently that a lot of people have, families have taken up rentals due to government pinui-binui schemes. Whether that's true or not, we're not sure. But it's one of those rental markets where you can't afford to be too picky. You have to compromise somewhere and you have to be a bit more imaginative. So the question is, what's most important to you? Is it the location? Can you compromise on the level of walk-up you'll tolerate or the layout? And the layout is often the thing that to us feels kind of illogical. Like, you'll frequently see these huge spaces where the kitchen is tiny and then the bedroom is gigantic. And you're like, that's not really very cleverly thought out, but as a renter, you're clearly not going to be, you know, altering the property. Here's what I'd love to ask you about today. Sometimes you see a room where you think this could be subdivided with a little nursery. And I'm not talking about an actual permanent alteration to the property. I'm talking about something that for the duration of your tenancy is going to be functional. And we mentioned the last day in our episode about renovating rentals that there is kind of this fallacy sometimes, I think, if we can look back at our own rental career, that you think, well, I don't want to spend money on a place that isn't mine. We're already, you know, paying the real estate broker's fee, which is ridiculous. You're paying someone else's mortgage. To also renovate the place seems like going too far. But then again, if you're going to be living there for a few years and you can keep the modifications fairly modest, it actually does make sense. Of course, with the landlord's permission and coordination. If you're looking at a project like this, Herman and Corin, maybe partitioning a room. If you go to IKEA, you'll see these room partitions. You'll see curtains, blackout curtains, and there's all sorts of options. But frequently, as we mentioned in our previous episodes, we get, or I certainly get, IKEA paralysis. You know that IKEA has what you need, but there are simply so many different fixtures and curtains and ways to do it that you're not sure what to go for. Herman and Corin, if you were setting up those, even not subdividing a room, if you just wanted to kind of create a feeling of separation between maybe a workspace and the rest of the room, things that you can do as a renter that will actually make the space feel more logical and appropriate for what you're trying to do, as opposed to just working with the room layout that it comes in. Maybe taking the viewpoint that the apartment is kind of an empty shell, which is basically how we get them in Israel. The standard is air conditioners are included. Everything except the air conditioner you can't expect to actually be there. So you literally do get an empty shell. And what do you think, what would you advise someone who's looking to creatively make the space suitable for how they're going to use it? Over to you two.
Daniel sent us this one. He's in the thick of apartment hunting in Jerusalem, which, if you've never done it, imagine trying to buy the last loaf of challah on a Friday afternoon. But the challah also has a broken boiler and costs four times what it should. His question is really about what you do once you've landed the place. You're a renter, you've got an empty shell. Because that is the Israeli standard, you get air conditioners and nothing else. And the layout makes no sense. The bedroom is a ballroom, the kitchen is a closet, and you need to carve out a nursery or a workspace without putting holes in anything the landlord will later use to withhold your deposit. What actually works?
There's a specific tension here worth naming up front. The prompt mentions something I've seen 100 times, the psychological block against spending money on a place you don't own. You're already paying the broker's fee, which in Jerusalem can run from 1 month's rent plus VAT to even more, depending on how desperate the market is. The idea of then investing in curtains, partitions, furniture that fits a weird layout, it feels like throwing good money after bad. But here's the thing. If you're going to be there for 2 or 3 years, which is pretty standard, the cost per day of making the space functional is genuinely trivial. A 2,000 shekel room divider over 3 years works out to less than 2 shekels a day.
Less than a bus ride.
Less than a bus ride. And you get to not hate every minute you spend in your own home? That's worth something.
The I don't want to spend money on someone else's property fallacy, and I'm calling it a fallacy because it is one, has a cousin, the I'll just live with it for now fallacy. You move in, you tell yourself you'll figure out the workspace situation later, and then 3 years pass, and you've been taking Zoom calls from your bed the entire time.
Which is bad for sleep hygiene, bad for posture, bad for your mental separation between work and rest. But let's get concrete. The prompt asks about subdividing a room, creating a nursery, partitioning a workspace, all without permanent alterations. There are essentially 3 tiers of solutions here.
Tier it up.
Tier 1 is visual separation. Curtains, open shelving units, strategically place furniture that says this area is different from that area without blocking light or airflow. Tier 2 is semi-permanent soft partitioning, tension rods, ceiling-mounted curtain tracks that use existing fixtures, freestanding folding screens. Tier 3 is the IKEA hack zone, modular systems like the Elvarelli or Calax units that function as room dividers with built-in storage. That's the sweet spot for renters, because you're not just partitioning, you're adding function.
The Elvarelli system, I looked this up, is a floor-to-ceiling pole system. No drilling required. It uses tension between floor and ceiling to stay upright, and then you attach shelves, drawers, hanging rods to it. It is basically a wall you can take with you when you leave.
That's the one. And the Calax, the cube shelf everyone knows, can be used as a room divider. The 4x4 unit is about 150 centimeters wide and tall. It doesn't reach the ceiling, but it creates a clear boundary zone. Put fabric bins in the lower cubes, leave the upper ones open for light, and suddenly you've got a nursery corner that feels like its own room.
Here's what I'd add. The empty shell problem in Israel is actually an opportunity dressed as an inconvenience. You walk into a rental and it's just white walls and tile floors and air conditioner units. It feels bleak, but you have complete creative control. There's no landlord's ugly sofa you're stuck with, no built-in cabinetry you hate but can't remove. You are furnishing from zero, which means every single thing you bring in is serving your actual needs.
That's the reframe, and it connects to something about the Jerusalem rental market specifically. The Pinui Binui thing the prompt mentions. Urban renewal schemes where old buildings are evacuated and rebuilt. That's real. When families get displaced for construction that can take 3 to 5 years, they flood the rental market. These are often families with kids competing for the same 3-bedroom places everyone else wants. It tightens supply in very specific segments.
You end up taking a place with a layout that wasn't designed for you. The living room is long and narrow, the bedroom is weirdly huge, the kitchen is a corridor. And you think, well, I can't knock down walls, so I guess this is my life now.
You can do a lot more than most people think. Say you've got a master bedroom that's disproportionately large. Very common in older Jerusalem apartments because they were built when families had different spatial priorities. You can partition off a section using a ceiling-mounted curtain track. The keyword is ceiling-mounted, not wall-mounted. You use existing light fixture anchors or a tension rod system. The IKEA Vidja track system is designed for exactly this. A single track that can be ceiling mounted, and you can bend it into an L shape or U shape to create a curtained enclosure.
Writing that down.
It's inexpensive. The track sections are maybe 30 shekels each, connectors and ceiling mounts add another 50 or 60, and then you need curtains. Here's where people get paralyzed. What kind? Do I need blackout? For a nursery inside a bedroom, you probably want something that blocks light during daytime naps but still lets you hear the baby. A medium-weight cotton curtain, not blackout, on a ceiling track that wraps around the crib area. It creates a cocoon. It signals to the baby and to you that this is a distinct sleep space.
For workspace, you want the opposite. You want visual separation, so you're not staring at your unmade bed while trying to focus. But you probably want light to pass through. A sheer curtain on a tension rod. Or better yet, an open shelving unit that acts as a semi-transparent wall.
The open shelving unit is the workhorse of renter space division. It doesn't require any installation beyond assembly. It provides storage, which you always need more of, and it creates a psychological boundary. There's actual research on this from environmental psychology. A study from the University of Michigan looked at open-plan offices and found that even low partitions significantly reduced visual distractions and improved focused work. The mechanism isn't about blocking sound or sight completely, it's about defining territory.
That's the phrase I was reaching for. When your desk is just sort of in the corner of the living room, there's no territory boundary. Your word brain and your relaxation brain are occupying the same physical coordinates, and they leak into each other.
You can create territory definition with remarkably little. A rug that defines the workspace zone. A floor lamp that only illuminates that area. A bookshelf placed perpendicular to the wall. These are all renter-friendly because they're just furniture. Nothing is attached to anything.
Let's talk about rugs for a second, because they're underrated as spatial tools. In an Israeli apartment, you've almost always got tile floors, ceramic or marble if you're fancy. They're hard, cold in winter, and reflect sound in a way that makes every room feel like a gymnasium. A large area rug under your seating area doesn't just define the zone visually, it changes the acoustics and the thermal feel of the space. And it rolls up when you leave.
Rugs are the unsung heroes. But I want to circle back to the IKEA paralysis problem the prompt mentions. The paralysis comes from option abundance combined with lack of spatial confidence. You walk into IKEA, you see 50 room divider solutions, and you have no idea which one will actually work in your specific weirdly shaped room. The fix is to reverse the process. Don't go to the store and browse. Measure your space first. Tape out the proposed division on the floor with painter's tape, which peels off clean. Live with the tape layout for 2 or 3 days. Walk around it. See if the traffic flow makes sense.
Painter's tape is a spatial prototyping tool. That's brilliant.
It costs 12 shekels and prevents you from buying a 400 shekel shelving unit that makes your room worse. Once you've lived with the layout and confirmed it works, then you go shopping with specific dimensions and a specific function in mind. The decision tree narrows dramatically. You're no longer browsing room dividers, you're looking for a freestanding unit between 140 and 160 centimeters wide, at least 180 tall, with open shelving on top and closed storage on bottom. That's a query, not a browse.
This is the antidote to paralysis. Constrain the problem until it has one or two viable answers. The prompt also mentioned walk-ups. Jerusalem is full of walk-ups. If you're on the third floor with no elevator, that changes what you can practically bring in. You're not hauling a solid wood room divider up 3 flights of stairs.
Weight and modularity become critical. The Elvarley system comes in boxes you can carry yourself. The Kallax comes flat-packed. Curtain tracks come in slim packages. Nothing requires a moving crew. This is another reason. The empty shell is secretly a feature. Everything you're bringing in is designed to be transported and assembled by one or two people.
There's also the landlord permission question. The prompt mentions doing things with a landlord's coordination, which is smart. In Israel, legally, anything that's not a permanent fixture is generally yours to do. If it doesn't involve drilling, plumbing, or electrical work, you probably don't need to ask. A tension rod, a freestanding shelf, a rug, a curtain on a spring-loaded rod. None of that touches the structure.
The gray area is ceiling-mounted curtain tracks. Technically, you're putting screws into the ceiling. But a lot of Israeli apartments already have anchor points for light fixtures or previous curtain installations. You can often use existing holes. And if you do need to drill, a conversation with the landlord that goes, "I'd like to install a ceiling curtain track that I'll leave in place when I go, and I'll fill and paint the holes if you prefer." Most reasonable landlords will say yes, especially if it improves the functionality of the apartment.
Most reasonable landlords is doing a lot of work in that sentence.
But even with difficult landlords, the tension-based systems exist and they work. The Vidya track can be mounted with adhesive strips if the ceiling surface is smooth enough. There are spring-loaded poles that go floor to ceiling and create a mounting point for curtains without touching the ceiling at all. You can build an entire room division system without a single hole if you need to.
Let's get into some specific room layouts. Say you've got a long, narrow living room, very typical Jerusalem salon, and you need to carve out a home office at one end. What's the play?
First thing, don't put the desk against the wall. That's the instinct, but it wastes the length of the room. Put the desk perpendicular to the wall facing into the room with the back of the desk creating the division line. Then put a low shelving unit. Collax 2x4 on its side, behind the desk, parallel to it. Now you've got a workspace that faces the room but is visually buffered from the seating area. The shelving unit behind you gives you a surface for a lamp, some plants, your printer. It's a wall that isn't a wall.
The seating area is on the other side of that shelf, facing away from the workspace. Two zones, one room, no construction.
The lighting is what seals it. Put a focused task light on the desk and a warmer, softer light in the seating area. The visual difference between cool work light and warm relaxation light does more psychological separation work than any physical barrier. Your brain sees the boundary even if your eyes don't register a wall.
What about the nursery scenario? That's a specific challenge because you need to manage light, sound, and the parent's ability to check on the baby without fully entering the sleep zone.
Identify the corner of the room farthest from the door and any windows that get direct afternoon sun. You want the baby's area to be the most temperature-stable part of the room. Use a ceiling-mounted curtain track to create an L-shaped enclosure around the crib. The curtain should be medium weight, not blackout, because you want ambient light to help regulate the baby's circadian rhythm, but substantial enough to create a visual cocoon. Inside the enclosure, crib, small changing surface on a dresser, a dimmable nightlight. Outside, the parent's bed. The curtain track means you can open the enclosure fully during the day, making the room feel spacious, and close it at night for sleep separation.
You can hear through the curtain. A solid room divider would block sound in a way that might actually be dangerous with an infant. The curtain dampens visual stimulus but lets sound through.
When you move out, you take down the track, fill three screw holes, and the room is exactly as you found it.
Let's talk about the kitchen situation. Because the prompt mentions it. Huge spaces with tiny kitchens. You've got a salon that could host a wedding reception, and a kitchen that's basically a hallway with a stove. What do you do?
This is where IKEA freestanding kitchen islands come in. The VRHA kitchen cart, the VAD Holma open shelving unit, the Tornviken kitchen island. These are all designed to be freestanding. No installation, no plumbing. You place them at the boundary between the tiny kitchen and the oversized living area, and they create additional work surface and storage while also defining the transition between kitchen zone and living zone. It's a room divider that also gives you somewhere to chop vegetables.
The Tornviken specifically. It's got a butcher block top, open shelving on one side, and a drop leaf that extends the work surface. You're essentially annexing part of the living room into the kitchen without building anything.
Because it's on casters, you can move it. If you're having guests and want the space to feel open, you roll it against the wall. If you're cooking a big meal and need the surface, you roll it into position. That flexibility is something built-in kitchen islands don't have.
There's a broader principle here. When you're renting, your relationship to the space is temporary by definition. But temporary doesn't have to mean provisional. You can create a fully functional, aesthetically coherent home using only things that can be disassembled and moved. The constraint of no permanent alterations forces a kind of creativity that homeowners often skip because they can just knock down a wall.
The market has caught up. The number of renter-friendly furnishing solutions available now versus even 10 years ago is night and day. IKEA's entire product line is essentially designed for people who might move. The Vidya track system, the Alvarelli poles, the Kallax units, the freestanding kitchen islands. None of these existed in their current form 20 years ago. They were developed specifically because the global rental population has grown so much.
The other thing that's changed is the cultural attitude. There was a time when renting was seen as a temporary phase you endured before buying. But in Jerusalem, where property prices have essentially detached from local salaries, renting is a long-term reality for a lot of families. The median apartment price is something like 2.5 million shekels. That's not a starter home you save up for over a few years. That's a multi-generational wealth transfer situation. So you're looking at a rental horizon that might be 5, 10, 15 years.
If you're going to be in a rental for a decade, I don't want to spend money on someone else's property. Stops making sense. You're not spending money on the property, you're spending money on your quality of life inside the property. Those are different categories.
It's like saying, I don't want to buy nice clothes because I don't own the restaurant I'm eating at. The ownership of the container and the experience of being inside it are separate things.
That's a very good way to put it. The practical advice, which curtain track, which shelving unit, That's useful, but the deeper thing is giving people permission to invest in a space they don't own.
Permission to care about your rental, which sounds obvious when you say it out loud, but the cultural messaging is all the other way. Don't paint, don't hang things, don't get attached, it's not yours. And then you live in a beige box for 5 years and wonder why you're depressed.
Let's talk about paint, actually, because that's a surprisingly renter-friendly intervention in Israel. A lot of landlords will let you paint if you offer to paint it back to white before you leave. Or they'll let you paint and just leave it, because fresh paint in a neutral color is an improvement. A gallon of paint is 150 shekels. A room takes a weekend. The transformation is enormous.
Color defines zones even more effectively than furniture. Paint the workspace alcove a different color from the living area, and the boundary is visible from across the room. No physical divider needed.
The caveat is, you need to get it in writing. A WhatsApp message from the landlord saying yes, you can paint is sufficient. You don't need a contract amendment, but you need the record.
This is the boring practical advice that saves you from losing your deposit. Take photos when you move in. Get permissions in writing. The rental market in Jerusalem is tight enough that you don't want a dispute on your record.
On the topic of deposits, here's something a lot of renters don't know. As of the last few years, there are now legal limits on what landlords can deduct and timelines for returning them. The 2017 amendment to the rent control law, which isn't actually rent control, it's tenant protection, requires landlords to return deposits within 30 days of move-out, unless they provide an itemized list of damages with receipts. If they don't, you can take them to small claims.
Knowing your rights changes your willingness to make the space yours. If you understand that normal wear and tear can't be deducted, and you've documented the condition at move-in, you can be bolder about putting up shelves and curtains and paint without fearing a financial ambush at the end.
Let's circle back to the illogical layout, because I think that's the core of the prompt. The huge bedroom with the tiny kitchen, the long, narrow living room. The apartment where the only logical place for a dining table is also the main walkway from the front door to the bathroom. These are not problems you can fix with furniture arrangement alone. You need to rethink what the rooms are for.
This is the part where you stop fighting the layout and start embracing the weirdness. If the bedroom is enormous and the living room is tiny, maybe the bedroom becomes the primary living space. Put the sofa in there. Make the tiny living room into a dedicated dining room or a home office. Just because the landlord calls it a bedroom doesn't mean you have to use it as one.
I've seen this done brilliantly in Jerusalem apartments. The salon becomes the master bedroom because it's the quietest room, farthest from the street. The largest bedroom becomes the family room because it gets the best light. The kitchen stays where it is because you can't move plumbing. But the adjacent small bedroom becomes a pantry and storage area. You're working with the same square footage, just reassigning functions.
This is where the empty shell becomes an advantage again. There's no dining room chandelier anchoring you to a specific use. There's no built-in entertainment center dictating where the TV goes. You can assign functions to rooms based on how you actually live, not based on what the floor plan labels them.
Let's get into some specific product recommendations, because the prompt explicitly mentions IKEA paralysis, and I want to give people a clear starting point. Option 1, the Kallax shelving unit. 4x4 or 5x5 depending on ceiling height. Place it perpendicular to a wall. Use fabric bins and alternating cubes to create a semi-opaque barrier. Total cost may be 800 to 1200 shekels depending on size and bins. Option 2, the Vidya ceiling track with curtains. Total cost for a 3-meter track with curtains may be 400 shekels. Option 3, the Elverly pole system with shelves. More expensive, probably 2000 shekels for a full configuration, but it gives you a floor-to-ceiling storage wall that feels like architecture.
Option 4, the classic folding screen. IKEA sells the RICR screen for about 300 shekels. It's 3 panels, solid pine, you can paint it. It's not going to create a sound barrier, but it creates an instant visual block, and you can fold it flat against the wall when you don't need it.
The RICRR is great for temporary division, like when you have guests staying on your sofa bed and want to give them some privacy. But for everyday use, it's a bit flimsy. The Kallax is the real workhorse for permanent division.
What about curtains? The prompt specifically mentions blackout curtains versus regular. When do you actually need blackout?
Blackout curtains serve two purposes, light control and thermal control. In Jerusalem, where summer temperatures regularly hit 35 degrees, blackout curtains on west-facing windows can reduce your air conditioning costs. The thermal lining reflects heat back outside, so even if you don't need total darkness for sleep, blackout curtains on the sunny side of the apartment make thermodynamic sense.
For room division, as opposed to window treatment, you almost never want blackout. You want light to pass through so the divided space doesn't feel like a cave. The IKEA Hilja curtain panels are a good middle ground. Semi-sheer, cheap, neutral colors. 300 shekels gets you enough to divide a room.
The Hilja is good. The Lenda is another option. Heavier, more like a traditional curtain, but still lets light through. It comes in a natural beige that works with basically everything.
We're going deep on IKEA product names, and I'm not mad about it.
This is what people actually need. They don't need abstract advice about creating zones. They need someone to say, buy this specific track, these specific curtains, and put them here. So let me provide the framework. Step 1, measure your space. Step 2, tape out the division on the floor. Step 3, decide whether you need storage from your divider or just visual separation. If storage, go Kallax or Elvarley. If just separation, go Vidja track with curtains. Step 4, choose curtain weight based on how much light you want to pass through. Step 5, install. The whole process from measurement to finished room should take 1 weekend and cost between 400 and 2,000 shekels depending on choices.
That's the kind of clarity that cuts through paralysis. I want to add one more option that's even cheaper and more temporary, the tension rod with a curtain. You can get a spring-loaded tension rod at any hardware store for about 60 shekels. It goes between two walls with no hardware, no holes, no nothing. Hang a curtain on it and you've got an instant divider. It's not as elegant as a ceiling track, but it works in about 10 minutes and costs under 200 shekels total.
The tension rod is the gateway drug of room division. You try it, you realize how much better the space feels, and 6 months later you're installing a ceiling track and wondering why you didn't do it sooner.
Let's address the nursery question more directly, because I think it's the most emotionally charged version of this problem. You're bringing a baby into a rental. You need a space that feels safe, contained, and separate enough that the baby can develop sleep patterns without the parents tiptoeing around in the dark. But you're also exhausted and don't want to embark on a major construction project.
The nursery in a bedroom setup I described works, but let me add specifics. First, the crib should be positioned so you can see it from your bed. That means the curtain enclosure should have an opening facing the parent's sleeping area, or the curtain should be sheer enough that you can see the crib silhouette. Second, you need a small light source inside the nursery zone that's dim enough not to wake the baby fully during nighttime feeds. The IKEA Cornus Nord nightlight is 30 shekels, dimmable, and cordless. Third, you need a dedicated surface for diaper changes inside the nursery zone so you're not carrying a screaming baby across a dark room at 3 in the morning.
All of this fits inside a 2-meter by 2-meter curtained enclosure. It's a room within a room.
When the baby outgrows it, which happens fast, you take down the curtain track, fill the holes, and the bedroom is a bedroom again. The whole setup has a shelf life of maybe 18 months, which is perfect for a rental intervention.
The temporary nature of the solution matches the temporary nature of the need. That's elegant.
Let's talk about the workspace problem, because I think that's the other scenario the prompt is really focused on. You're working from home, you need a dedicated desk area, but the apartment doesn't have a spare room. What creates the feeling of I'm at work versus I'm at home when both things are happening in the same physical space?
The commute is the thing you're missing. When you commute to an office, you have a physical transition that tells your brain work mode on. When your desk is in your living room, there's no transition. You roll out of bed and you're at work. So you need to manufacture a commute.
A manufactured commute. I love that. And the room divider is part of it. You physically cross a threshold when you enter the workspace. But there are other elements. A dedicated work lamp that only turns on during work hours. A different scent in the workspace, a specific candle or essential oil that you only use when working. A closing ritual. At the end of the day where you close the laptop, turn off the work lamp, and maybe drape a cloth over the desk. These are all psychological boundary markers.
The cloth over the desk is underrated. It's the visual equivalent of closing the office door. You can't see the work. Work stops existing.
If you're using a shelving unit as a room divider, you can put a plant on the shelf that faces the living area. The plant is the first thing you see when you look toward the workspace, and it softens the transition. It says this is a living space that happens to contain work, rather than this is a workspace that has invaded the living room.
The plant is ambassador between zones. I'm into it.
Here's another specific recommendation for the workspace scenario. The IKEA SCADIS pegboard. It's a wall-mounted organization system, but you don't have to mount it on the wall. You can lean it on a desk against the wall or attach it to the side of a Kallax unit. It holds your cables, your notebooks, your headphones, all the work detritus that otherwise spreads across every available surface. Containing the work clutter is part of creating the psychological separation.
Work clutter is territorial. It expands to fill whatever space you give it. If your desk is in the corner of the living room with no boundaries, your work stuff ends up on the coffee table, the dining table, the kitchen counter. The division isn't just about visual separation, it's about containment.
Containment is a form of respect for the other people you live with. If you share the apartment with a partner or family, the room divider says, "My work stops here." It's a boundary for them as much as for you.
The prompt mentions Daniel's wife Hannah and son Ezra. They're all sharing the space. When you're working from home with a family, the division isn't just about your own focus. It's about signaling to everyone else that you're in work mode. A curtain you can close is a do not disturb sign that doesn't require words.
The curtain is better than a closed door because it's softer. It doesn't feel like you're shutting your family out. It feels like you're creating a temporary focus zone. The visual cue is clear but not aggressive.
Let's talk about cost for a minute, because the prompt mentions the broker's fee and the sense that you're already hemorrhaging money just to get into the place. What's a realistic budget for making a weird rental layout functional?
Let me break it down for three scenarios. Scenario 1, basic visual separation. One tension rod, two curtain panels, one area rug, one floor lamp, total about 600 shekels. Scenario 2, workspace creation with storage divider. One Kallax 4x4 unit, four fabric bins, one desk, one task lamp, one area rug. Total, about 2,500 shekels. Scenario 3, nursery enclosure. One Vijiga ceiling track system with L-bend configuration, four curtain panels, one small dresser for changing, one night light. Total, about 1,500 shekels.
These are not crazy numbers. The broker's fee on a Jerusalem 3-bedroom is probably 8,000 to 12,000 shekels. The rental deposit is another 10 to 15,000. In that context, spending 2,000 shekels to make the apartment actually work for your life is a rounding error.
It's 1% of your first year housing costs. And unlike the broker's fee, which, as the prompt notes, is ridiculous, and I'll add that the standard in Israel of the tenant paying the broker despite the landlord hiring them is absurd. Unlike that fee, the room divider actually improves your life every single day.
The broker's fee is the financial equivalent of paying for someone else's appetizer. You didn't order it, you didn't eat it, but here's the bill.
Yet we all pay it because the market is what it is. But that's a separate episode. The point is, the cost of making a rental functional is small relative to the cost of being in the rental at all. The paralysis about spending money on a place you don't own is understandable but mathematically irrational.
We should also talk about what doesn't work. I see people try to use furniture arrangement alone to solve layout problems, and it often makes things worse. Pushing a sofa into the middle of a room to create a division without any vertical element just creates an obstacle course. The division needs height. It needs to interrupt sight lines. A sofa back is 40 centimeters tall. It doesn't read as a wall. It reads as a misplaced sofa.
The minimum effective height for a room divider is about eye level when seated, so roughly 120 centimeters. Anything shorter doesn't create a psychological boundary, it just creates clutter. The Kallax 4x4 is 150 centimeters. That's the sweet spot. Tall enough to feel like a wall, short enough to see over when standing.
Another thing that doesn't work, trying to divide a room that's already too small. If your bedroom is 10 square meters, you can't put a nursery in it. The curtain enclosure I described needs at least 4 square meters for the nursery zone, plus enough remaining space for the parents' bed and circulation. Room division only works when you have excess space in one dimension. If the room is small in all dimensions, the solution isn't division. It's reassigning a different room.
That's an important boundary condition. room division solves the problem of this room is too big for one function and too small for two functions that don't overlap. It doesn't solve the problem of this apartment is too small. Those are different problems.
The diagnostic question is, do I have a layout problem or a square footage problem? If it's layout, dividers help. If it's square footage, you need to look at vertical storage, multifunction furniture, and accepting that some activities will happen in shared space.
Multifunction furniture is a whole other category worth touching on. The IKEA Hemmens Daybed, it's a sofa during the day and a double bed at night. In a two-bedroom apartment where one bedroom is a nursery and the other is the parents' room, the daybed in the living room means you can still host guests. The Inno Ardeen gate leg table folds down to almost nothing when not in use, but expands to seat 6. These pieces are designed for exactly the kind of spatial constraint we're talking about.
The Norden is a classic for a reason. It's been in the IKEA catalog for like 30 years. It's the cockroach of furniture. Indestructible, adaptable, will outlive us all.
That's a backhanded compliment if I've ever heard one. But yes, the Norden endures because it solves a real problem. And that's the through line here. The best renter solutions are the ones that solve real specific problems without requiring you to alter the structure. They're reversible, they're portable, and they adapt to spaces that weren't designed for them.
I think we've covered the practical toolkit pretty thoroughly. Curtain tracks, shelving units, tension rods, rugs, lighting, paint. But I want to come back to the psychological shift, because I think it's the harder part. How do you get from, this is a temporary box I'm stuck in, to, this is my home that I'm going to shape to my needs?
I think it starts with giving yourself a timeline. If you know you're going to be in the rental for at least 2 years, you can make decisions on a 2-year horizon. A 2,000 shekel room divider over 2 years is 83 shekels a month. That's less than your coffee budget. The math makes the decision feel less like a commitment and more like a subscription to your own comfort.
Framing it as a monthly cost rather than a lump sum is a useful mental reframe. It's the same psychology that makes people okay with a 150 shekel phone bill, but balk at an 1800 shekel phone. The number is the same. The feeling is different.
The other thing is to recognize that a well-divided, well-organized rental is easier to leave than a chaotic one. If everything has a place, packing is faster. If your room dividers are freestanding, they come with you to the next apartment. The investment in making a space functional is portable, both the physical objects and the knowledge of how to set them up.
The knowledge is the real asset. Once you've figured out how to divide a weird Jerusalem living room into a workspace and a seating area, you can do it again in the next apartment in a weekend. You're not starting from zero.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1912, a lighthouse keeper in Guyana named Reginald Whitfield kept a logbook in which he meticulously documented the emotional states of the local manatees that congregated near his station, rating each one on a 4-point scale from morose to jocular, alongside standard weather observations. The log was discovered in a Georgetown archive in 1987 and remains the only known example of manatee mood tracking in maritime history.
A 4-point manatee mood scale. Of course there is.
Jocular is doing a lot of work there.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. If you enjoyed this episode, do us a favor and leave a review wherever you listen. It helps people find the show. You can also find every episode at My Weird Prompts.
Until next time. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird.
appeared in mine.